Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
It's time to retire to the drawing room.
So we were having a conversation in the office the other day about cultural diversity. And we wondered which industry is the least diverse. Would it be law or perhaps engineering, teaching, the media? Of course, we looked at ourselves. It turns out that the arts industry is one of the least diverse. The most recent survey of professional Australian artists shows that only 8% were from non-English speaking backgrounds. In Ung has written much about these issues. She joins me in the drawing room along with Lena Nalus from Diversity Arts Australia. Welcome to both of you. In, I'll start with you. When was that survey conducted?
It would have been a few years ago, about maybe 5 years ago, and that figure was actually the same as another survey that was done maybe 10 years before that. So that means that the arts industries remain relatively lacking in cultural diversity.
It's pretty incredible, especially the lack of change, I think I find the most staggering. I mean,
yes.
I knew it was low, but I thought things were changing.
Yes.
And the survey spoke with people from across many sectors of the arts industry, is that right?
Yes, it was mostly a survey amongst arts organisations and finding out what the composition of the artists were, curators, directors and so forth in those organisations.
And the number refers to professional artists. Does that mean that amateur artists, or really artists that are just not professionalised, not making much money, that's how I always interpret that, have better numbers?
That we don't know, but we probably think that that's the case. That would be a much more informal, a much broader range of people from many different backgrounds who do engage in a production of art and culture, who are relatively invisible in the official figures and in the mainstream organizations.
Lena, how do we improve these numbers? Because they're obviously, well, I don't think I'm, talking out of school here. They're appalling.
No, you're right. They are appalling. But I think we can improve those numbers. And it starts with a will to improve those numbers, a commitment from those major arts bodies, institutions, spaces to kind of create programs that will include and ensure that there is more diversity. With Screen New South Wales last year, they made a commitment to gender diversity and to having kind of 50% women in producer and directing roles, and they've been able to do that within a year just by having a quota system. The same thing needs to happen with cultural diversity in the arts. We need structured programs, mentorships, traineeships, as well as attachments. We also kind of need to look at the education system and the way that it's perpetuating this idea of this is what art is, this is what art looks like, contemporary Australian art is this, which excludes a lot of artists and creators and people. So it needs to happen at a range of level. It can happen. I think a good example for me is a filmmaker who I know who had to go to China and Vietnam where she's making big blockbuster films but couldn't get any substantial gigs in Australia because her work wasn't seen as being relevant to Australian audiences, which was absolutely not true. But the people who are making those decisions are often not representing the diversity of our community.
So do quotas work? Because they're often seen as a very controversial measure.
I don't think quotas on their own work, but I do think that we need to be able to measure and set quotas, and they work to some extent. And we've seen that in the UK with the Arts Council of England actually requiring organisations that they fund to address diversity in certain ways. There has been a kind of steady increase of diversity in terms of content, in terms of artists who are making work.
Let's look at some of the reasons behind all of this. Is it partly because the arts isn't considered a respectable career in some cultures, or is there a more sinister reason for the very low numbers?
Oh, that I think is a difficult question that you're asking what the reason is. I think that when we look at a lot of the major arts organisations, they are actually generally very Eurocentric organisations. These are art forms that have a very strong tradition in valuing forms of art that have a European background, and as a consequence leads to a marginalization of forms of art that might have other traditional influences. It's really a difficult question. It's not just about the artists themselves. For example, you can find a lot of Asian musicians, for example, in classical music. So, you know, it's not because of they don't want to do it. But then, you know, when they do enter into playing European-style classical music, they do get recognized and so forth. So it's a combination, I think, of, on the one hand, the range of artistic traditions and preferences that are somehow validated by the organizations, and on the other hand, groups of people who might come from backgrounds where arts and culture have very different forms. And I think that there is a mismatch in that respect, and that mismatch is what can cause this lack of diversity in these mainstream organisations.
You're just tuning in, you're in the Drawing Room, and my guests are Lena Nalus, Executive Director of Diversity Arts Australia, and In Ung, who's a Distinguished Professor of Cultural Studies at Western Sydney University. Lena, in your role, you must be dealing with these major arts institutions all the time. Have you witnessed a willingness from them to kind of try and address some of these issues?
Yes, there is, I think, more of a willingness. I feel like diversity is being spoken about more than it's ever been spoken about in my lifetime anyway, because the reality is we are living in such a diverse time, and probably the most diverse time that we've ever lived in terms of the way migration's happening and people being able to communicate online. So I know that the Arts Gallery of New South Wales, for instance, has introduced a diversity initiative. I don't know a lot about it, but I know that they have introduced that. And I will be meeting, I guess, next week with AFTERS, who are the Australian Film, Television and Radio School, who just released a report as well, kind of identifying gaps in the screen and television industry. So there is more discussion. Screen Australia recently released a report looking at 5 years of Australian television dramas and showing the lack of diversity in those dramas in terms of not just the actors, but also the stories. So the content, the fact that this is being talked about and there are moves to implement policies and strategies to address it, it makes me quite hopeful and excited.
You were both talking off air about the language of diversity. Do we have a problem with the language? Is it inclusive enough? Does it explain enough about what the project is in?
Of course, we talk a lot about diversity, but what we mean by it is quite open-ended. There is a convention on the protection and promotion of the diversity of cultural expressions, which was adopted by UNESCO in 2005, and Australia actually ratified that convention in 2009. So at that international level, there is a lot of will to really promote cultural diversity in the arts and culture. But when you look at how diversity gets interpreted in different countries, it can actually result in quite a variety. So, for example, we in Australia actually are quite advanced in terms of our discussion about cultural diversity because we have multicultural policy. The problem about that is also that multiculturalism is often simply associated with people who are different, ethnically diverse. So that means that for some reason it doesn't include the majority at all, and therefore talk about cultural diversity can sometimes lead to simply thinking about it as, like, you know, kind of a model where the different is somehow marginal that then needs to be propped up. Whereas I think that when we talk about cultural diversity in a more forward-looking sense, what we need to look at is how it includes everyone and how it can actually be a force for greater cultural innovation, greater cultural democracy, and greater cultural sustainability as living in a society which is so much populated by people from all corners of the world. So, yes, I think there is a lot of need for thinking through a bit more about what we mean by cultural diversity, not just in terms of a deficit, but also as something that needs to be promoted because it is really good to promote.
You've written about diversity fatigue. What do you mean by that?
Well, I do think that sometimes there is a bit of special pleading going on, or what is perceived as special pleading. For example, when we talk about that appalling lack of diversity in the arts industries, when we're mentioning the 8%, when we emphasize that, the conclusion very quickly is, well, you know, there is a problem here, so it's about deficit, and we need to promote certain groups who generally don't get a lot of attention. Now, on the one hand, that's the case, but on the other hand, I would very much like to move beyond a deficit model of diversity, which leads into people thinking, oh God, all those multicultural people again, they want all sorts of special kind of treats and things like that. Instead, if we think about cultural diversity in a more positive sense, we can go beyond that fatigue.
Lena, how important are smaller arts organisations? Do they become kind of the main incubators of diversity?
I believe that, yes, yeah, small arts organisations are crucial in the ecology of the arts sector. And that's what's really worrying about the fairly recent funding cuts, because they do affect those smaller organisations. So this is often the first opportunity, the first entry point into the arts, cultural screen sectors that people from non-English speaking backgrounds will have. And they will often play a really key role in kind of training and creating connections into the broader arts sector, or even into training and further education. I've worked prior to this role predominantly in those more grassroots arts organisations in areas like the western suburbs of Sydney, where we did work so much with culturally diverse artists and young emerging artists and newly arrived and artists from newly arrived migrant backgrounds, but also refugee backgrounds, and providing that support for them into providing kind of that skills base and that support, and even the language in terms of how to apply for grants or attachments was just so key for them to be able to enter the arts industry in a real way and to go on to develop sustainable kind of arts practices and careers.
It's interesting that in Australia, mm-hmm. where we have one in four people who have been born overseas and nearly half mm-hmm. who have parents who were born overseas,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that diversity is still something we struggle with. There must be something, well, you would assume there might be something really deep-rooted here.
Oh, well, there was something I wanted to mention, which is with diversity and the way that it's being talked about around the world, it recognises that diversity doesn't just mean cultural diversity. It means LGBTIQ diversity, disability, gender. And so with Diversity Arts Australia, we are focusing on cultural diversity, but also looking kind of intersectionally and working with those other sectors. But I did want to say that it's not, the arts has the most power to transform society, the arts, the media, the screen, you know, to actually get people thinking differently, to be able to stand in someone else's feet, to challenge ideas. So it doesn't ever surprise me that there would be that kind of control over that sector or that kind of resistance to change and to diversity. Is that cynical?
No.
Sorry, maybe I shouldn't put that.
But I do think that the, you know, pressure from the mainstream on minorities and voices from different groups is huge. And I think maybe the culture and the arts are one of those areas where you do need major courage and major support as well to actually make yourself heard. A lot of migrant families, the first generation, they are there to settle themselves, to establish themselves, to get the kids into the schools and to get an education and so forth. So they really do not have a lot of time or energy to focus on cultural production and consumption, whereas it's more the second generation where that can happen. I think cultural participation in that sense will take longer for newcomers to engage in.
I want to thank both of you for coming in. It's been a really interesting conversation. Let's see if the next time we speak, some of those numbers might shift. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
And joining me have been Lena Nalus. She's Executive Director of Diversity Arts Australia, and also In Ung, who's a Distinguished Professor of Cultural Studies at the Western Sydney University.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia, if you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell, Media, Technology, Culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.